Hello and welcome to the Animal Fire Podcast.
Woo!
Yeah, episode three.
Yeah, yeah.
The threesening. I'm here today with Jay Minton.
How you doing?
You guys all know very well. And Jeff Painter.
Greetings, Internet.
Who is our guest because Ian is exiled for swearing. Sorry if you had small children listening last week and you heard that one obscenity. But I'm very excited. Jeff Painter is a very cool guy. He's a young director like myself. He is a recent graduate of the Evergreen State College, where he formed a college theater group called Evergreen Shakespeare, which is very cool. It's right up our alley. And he loves to direct just like me, and he loves Shakespeare just like all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
He's legit.
Thanks
for having me on, yeah.
He's too legit. I'm not going to say that. That's so dumb.
Are you about to swear?
No, I was about to make an MC Hammer reference, which is worse.
Oh, awesome.
That's one of like the eight things on iTunes explicit, you know, swearing, and sexual content, MC Hammer references.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you didn't then. Yeah, that would have been terrible.
So we got a good podcast today, I think. I mean, I have no idea. We don't script these things out. But in my mind, my fantasy, this is a real good one.
Yes, we do not. We definitely do not script these things. What's that word?
What?
These out.
Oh, Jeff.
Off to a good start.
Yep, rousing. But our topic today is going to be directing Shakespeare. And I hope that we're going to approach it from kind of a cool angle because Jeff... What are you? You're 24, 25?
Uh-huh. Yeah, 24.
24? Cool.
Uh-huh.
I nailed it.
Yeah.
And I'm 26. So I think there's kind of a flavor of youth to this one where we're both young directors with an interest in Shakespeare. And I kind of want to talk about all the different problems and challenges would be the better word, maybe, that happens with being a young Shakespeare director. Because it's different, right?
Oh, totally.
I mean, if you were trained to act or you did acting in college or high school or even most of the time just being a young actor, you kind of come up through the ranks with much older directors who are a lot of times your teachers, who have had much, much more experience than you and who come from various backgrounds. You know, many of them are actors who eventually became teachers and now they're directing. They could be designers who did the same thing. They could be directors too. Or they could just be who knows what, who had master's degrees and now they're teaching. Why not? But there's kind of a built-in authority to the director when you're first starting out. And that can be kind of weird when you start trying to direct your peers and you don't have that built-in authority.
Yeah, and age usually really helps you to have that kind of authority and respect. You or I probably couldn't go to a professional company and direct a show, no matter how good of a director we are, might be, because no one's going to want to listen to the direction of a 26 or 24 year old. So it's a different beast for sure. Yeah,
I think you're right. It would be very hard if you were directing a group of 40 year old actors doing, I don't know, King Lear
or Hamlet right?
or Hamlet. Yeah, you know if you. And that's true, you know, this Hamlet we're doing in the park, which I'm sure you guys are thrilled to hear about again, but it's kind of what our world's revolving around right now, is the first show I feel like where I've got all actors in age-appropriate roles. I'm not doing that thing where whoever can grow the beard gets to play the king, which is kind of the young Shakespeare company's MO usually. Oh, you can grow a beard? You're going to play the king in this one, buddy. Sorry. And it's interesting because you're trying to communicate to them with, nuances about the characters' lives, which are hopefully parallel with their lives, but you don't have those same parallels in your life.
Well, I think that it almost gives you an advantage because it seems like it's a little easier to kind of step into, I mean, maybe Jay can speak to this more, but to step into a role which wasn't made for your age group. I mean, I would assume Hamlet's probably closer to Jay's age than most actors who play Hamlet, who usually are in their like 50s, because it's a pretty big role. But
do they play it in their 50s?
Dan Donahue just did it, and
he's 50.
I don't know how old he. I think maybe he's in his 40s.
I think you're right. He's like 43. You're right.
But
yeah, wow.
Prince Hamlet's supposed to be pretty young.
He looks young though. Good for him.
But I mean the point is doing Shakespeare as a young people, I think maybe that gives us an advantage because we have more room to play. In a sense, I mean, it's different. It's different, but we're not all character actors who have been hired into this role because we play the old crazy guy really well, you know. So we have to step into someone else's shoes. We have to recognize the fact that this person isn't like us at all, and maybe that helps us find the character a little bit easier.
What I usually like too about, I mean, it's all weird, right? Because we say, oh, you're the wrong age for that part. But, I mean, numerically, what was 50 was old man years in Shakespeare's time. Like, that was really, really old. And, you know, people getting married at 14, 15. Juliet is 14. That's one where actresses are always older than Juliet, but we don't think that's weird. You know, I think in our minds, a 20-year-old Juliet is about where that should be, but according to the text, she is 14. So,
well, yeah, I mean, there's a practical issue there too. You know, who you're gonna get that's 14 years old who could pull off Juliet?
Yeah, you have to have quite the waiver.
Yeah, I mean, right.
That's a lot of kissing on stage for a 14-year-old.
That's true. Or Zeffirelli's production, in which there was it Zeffirelli, the movie, the famous movie version of Romeo and Juliet. In which there's a slight bit of nudity, and the girl actually is about 15 or 16 in that movie. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's amazing. But
I'm glad you just promoted.
Do we have
15-year-old nudity on the show?
Do we have to slap explicit on this iTunes
probably.
Release now?
This is, oh man, you're making a fine case against guests on this show.
Yeah,
you and Ian. No, but that's exactly right. You know, it is. Like, if you want to talk about Hamlet, of course, in the text, it says he's 35 years old. But he doesn't act like a 35-year-old through most of the play. In fact, if he is 35, it's a very, very weird play. Mm-hmm. And most scholars, and I think most people just kind of go, that number, that's, I don't know about that. My idea behind it is always that the actor playing Hamlet in the first one, Richard Burbage, was 35. And when Shakespeare wrote the show, you had to have Richard Burbage will play every lead role in every show in the company. So, you know, he wrote this part. Oh, what a great show. Richard Burbage says, oh, it's called Hamlet. I must be playing Hamlet. This is all just fantasy, but it's in my mind. But his hands are tied. And there he is. And you have this 6'4". 350-pound middle-aged man playing Hamlet. That's the original Hamlet, which is very, very different than kind of what's in our mind about him.
That's interesting. You have an advantage there on me because I'm sure both of you are probably much more familiar with Hamlet. I've only seen it once. I've never even read it before. But
wow.
Yeah, I know. Right?
It's all right. You should check it out.
I know of all the plays that I'm really familiar with, Hamlet is the one I'm least probably.
Good, though. This is a good segue. Let's get back on topic. I don't want to stray too far off into Hamlet.
Sure, yeah.
I can. If you put a microphone in front of me and say Hamlet, I'll go on for days. Yeah, and there was a history lesson last podcast. But what do you do? Like, how do you deal with just, I don't want to say garner respect because, you know, I'm not trying to, like, have tips to dominating other human beings or something. You know, this is not the Machiavellian podcast, although maybe it is. I mean, there might be something to that. Read The Prince, everybody. That's how you direct. Just social manipulation. No. But, yeah, I'm going to say no. But how do you deal with peers who may not give you that natural respect and who you kind of have to earn your stripes with? Mm.
And, I mean, before I answer the question, I think that's actually, like, thinking about it, that's a pretty cool thing, actually, the fact that you have to earn that respect. Mm-hmm. We're not just granted that when we walk into the room, which keeps you humble, I think, you know?
Yeah.
If you have a terrible idea, your actors will tell you. That's a pretty nice thing to have, honestly, that kind of honesty from your actors.
Yeah, I was thinking that as I was saying it. You're exactly right. That's very cool that you have that relationship where it's much closer to the best idea in the room is the one that's going to go forward.
And I think you and I probably have... pretty different methods in terms of how we approach. I don't know, possibly.
I think we do.
Well, let's find out. Yeah.
let's hash this out.
Let's lay it all on the table. Yeah.
I should warn you guys, Jeff and I are famously known for arguing fiercely when we go out and maybe have a drink and talk about stuff. So we'll see how well this goes.
So that should this should make a good it should be entertaining.
Yes.
Yeah,
this is episode 3 will make or break this podcast. You're it.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
You guys
are
setting high bars here.
Yeah. You're my touchstone, Jeff. So, but talk about that. I do want to hear. I want to hear your thoughts. Like, what when you first sit down your cast, let's say, and you've got to explain your ideas for the show, do you just hope that the merits of your ideas, you just work very hard and hope that you've got good ideas and that the merits will carry themselves? Is that all you can do?
Well, I think there's that and be adaptable. I mean, yes, your ideas have to be a lot more honed. You have to walk into the room. If you're going to do something radical, you've got to be sure that this is the right thing, because everyone's going to try to convince you that it's not right, or they're going to try to put their text back in. And that's wonderful, that kind of collaborative relationship. I don't think there's a way to, especially as a young director, to get a text in at the very beginning that's bulletproof, and all of your ideas, hopefully, your ideas will change as you continue to rehearse. But I do think, I think that the key, especially as young directors who don't demand that kind of respect when we walk into the room, is to have more of a collaborative relationship where maybe all of those decisions aren't made when you walk in the door. And I mean, we had that benefit, all three of us, Jay and Austin and I worked on Twelfth Night together, which was my thesis in college. And we had the benefit of having 3 months, wasn't it, of rehearsal?
Yes.
Yeah, it was
very long rehearsal
very long,
period.
And we had 2.5 weeks of Christmas break in between to just kind of meditate, you know, like a month before we opened. And there was a lot of room to play. So I think that's really important, to have that kind of flexibility. So that's something we share. Okay, so that's one mark in the similar category.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you just said. That's fantastic. And that's also really nice as a director, right? Because you're trying to figure out your style or your voice as a director, and you need that time to play, to try ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have 30 years of directing experience to know that, oh, if I block something like this, it'll always work. You're kind of going, I don't know. Let's try it. Let's see if I can move this guy that way, and let's see if that's going to help tell the story, or if it's going to just look like crap.
Yeah, yeah. You do have to. Yeah, you have to get that feedback. You have to have time for that feedback too. Yeah. But how much time do you guys have? I hate to go back to Hamlet. Let's just say generally for your summer productions, because this is your third summer production. How much time have you had on average for rehearsal?
Well, we usually plan about 7 weeks with 5 days a week, and then we lose 4 or 5 days to rain. Mm-hmm. And it's always tricky in the summer because everybody has very complex schedules. Summer is a busy time for everybody. And so if you assume 7 weeks on average, about 3.5 days a week for 5 hours, somewhere in that range.
7 weeks, though, that's pretty much twice as much as you would get at a normal
yes.
kind of regional theater, yeah.
But hour-wise, it's not, because, you know, at a normal regional theater, you would rehearse 8 hours a day, 6 hours a day, mm. 6 days a week.
Yeah, right. So maybe it kind of evens out a little bit?
I hope, yeah. Hopefully.
Well, I mean, my experience with last year's production was that there was a lot of room to play. And maybe that was just the nature of the beast. You know, it wasn't a huge, huge budget show, and we had to have this giant set that revolved around a certain theme. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were certainly ideas that came in at the beginning that were there at the end, but there was still, I felt like there was a lot more time in that production than even in at a regional theater to kind of play with your character. And
yeah, which is nice. Again, if you we're all young, so I think the directors need the time to play as directors, and the actors need that time to play as actors, because we're all it's still so educational for us, and it's such a growth experience for everybody that it's nice to have that freedom. You know, we're not just trying to knock out the show very quickly, very efficiently, and very professionally. It's exploratory, you know, trying to kind of feel ourselves out and grow as actors.
I feel like that is a huge difference between a normal regional. I mean, because as the director at a normal regional theater, you have such a compressed timetable that it would actually hurt you, I think, in most scenarios, to open that up for kind of public discussion, because you don't have the time. You don't have the time to play around and listen to everyone's opinions. And when you do give people that authority to choose which lines they're going to say or not say, or what their costume is, or whatever, then you get too much feedback, and the focus isn't as direct.
Mm-hmm.
So, let me shoot a question at you.
Oh God. Okay.
Okay. In what ways does not having that respect hurt you as a director? I mean, like, I am problem actors, right? Probably
yes.
are more difficult to deal with.
I think a lot of time, there can be lost time from bad communication. You know, if you're not, I guess I'll put the onus on the director. If you're not good at explaining your ideas, if you have this big idea or this kind of hard to understand idea, and you feel very strongly that yes, this is going to tell the story better, this is going to make a better production, but you can't explain it right, or it goes against something the actors might be naturally inclined to do, there can be a lot of lost rehearsal time where people feel resistant, or they want to argue about it, or they feel very uncomfortable, because it all comes from feeling insecure about, you know, if they feel like this idea is going to make them look stupid, or it's not going to help them, or they don't understand it, that can be a hindrance. You know, that you do have, so, I mean, we talked about, you've got all this time to play and explore, but as soon as you say that, you realize how you don't, and your hours are so precious.
Mm.
And so when you lose those, that can really feel very painful and feel like, oh, if only I hadn't argued for 3 hours about cutting those three lines from that monologue, I could have run the show 2 more times. Mm. You know, it could have been that much more polished and that much more clear.
Yeah. I do feel like you lose something there.
I think part of the problem, another thing I wanted to get your take on here, is that traditionally directors do come from a very diverse background, especially in college and things like that. College and maybe community theater and just kind of the various theaters you pop around, and probably regional theaters too. I'm just not as well experienced in those. But it seems like the director, in some people's minds, can be kind of an end game for an actor, or it's the end. It's somewhere you come to towards the end of your career when you have lots of experience doing things, and then you can act as well, or direct, or kind of go back and forth. And my big push, or the thing that I think people kind of can forget, is that being a director, in my mind, is its own profession with its own very specific skill set. And I think it needs its own type of person. Just like we would say, oh, that person seems very well suited to be an actor. He's got that right temperament.
Right.
I think that there is a type of person that should be a director, and that sometimes we forget about that. And it's hard because, you know, you're young and you're trying to learn your craft, but it's a very different craft from the people who are trying to learn their acting craft.
Right. And sometimes you get a director who's an actor director who maybe isn't suited to be a director,
mm-hmm.
or oftentimes I think what happens in your case is, you know, you don't want to be the actor type. You are the director type, but there's this idea that you have to be something else first. You have to come from a design background or an acting background in order to become a director. Well, and part of that issue is practical. I mean, we're talking about having to direct our peers here. Mm-hmm. There is a real issue when the majority of your cast is older than you. Having had to take over a rehearsal when the director got sick at Harlequin for like a week was really difficult. And there were only 3 actors and had to try to finish to block the play. But, you know, understandably, I don't have the experience or the age or, you know, the authority to command that kind of respect to be able to give direction, and which is fine. But I think maybe that's why we get pigeonholed into this idea that directing is a graduation from some other aspect of production. It's not its own particular beast and has its own set of skills.
Yeah, and the hard thing is, where do directors gain experience?
Right.
You know, because you do, I think, when you step in to direct a show, like a full-size show, you do need a strong knowledge of theater and kind of there's one director and he always has that big job. Whereas with acting, you can play a small part and you can spend, you know, some of the time getting your feet wet, and some of your time watching the show, you know, and just being going through the rehearsal process. But, and you've done a lot of assistant directing, which is very cool.
Right.
So maybe you can tell me a little bit more about that. But it seems like with directing, it's 0 to 10. There's no gradual build into being a director.
Mm.
So, you know, how do you find that experience? That can be kind of tricky, you know. I started out as an actor in college and then got into directing. And here I am saying how you shouldn't do that.
Well, what's the plan? Let's come up with a plan then. I mean, because there are so many people who are doing pretty much exactly what we're doing. They get out of college, they want to direct, or they want to put on shows and act, and what they do is they do Shakespeare in the Park or in abandoned buildings, and mm-hmm. like you did when Animal Fire Theater started. I feel like a lot of people deal with this issue. So if you want, for all the young directors out there like us, or who are maybe even younger, just getting out of college, you know, in a couple of days, what should they do? How do we keep learning how to direct? How do we keep continuing to get that education if we don't want to step into the role of an actor or a designer? If we know that that's our path.
I suppose I would say if you're lucky enough to be able to do it, find a way to do it.
Like, just produce a great body of work. I got to be prolific, do yes. a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yes. But I think if you can find a way to watch rehearsals, to be around other directors, that's good, because I feel like the way I came at it was I was in college for acting, but I was not very good. And so I would get cast as like guard number one, the one line guy who comes in with a little bit of exposition, you know, the messenger, things like that. And so I spent, you know, five and a half years basically just watching shows and being there for the entire rehearsal process and watching show after show after show and watching everyone get directed and seeing how the whole thing was built from the ground up. And I guess that kind of, you start to go, well, why do you have him moving over there? Why is he doing that? Maybe he should do this. You know, you get bored. You start analyzing the play. You know, it becomes the game of what would I do different? How could I do this better? Mm-hmm. What do I like? When I see something, what do I say? Oh, wow, that is really powerful and really good. And when am I bored going, I wish this rehearsal would end so I could go home?
That's really ironic, because both of our paths kind of parallel in a lot of ways. I mean, neither of us really discovered theater until college,
mm-hmm.
Kind of later in our college career too, which is strange. We didn't do it in high school. And then I also began in tech theater. So I watched a lot of, at a professional company or semi-professional. And in a lot of ways, I'm like sitting here nodding my head. You guys can't see at home, but I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Yeah. Sitting up in the catwalks, watching the show 50 times, having nothing to do but maybe move the spotlight every now and again, you start to think about these deeper things about why this show is working or why it isn't, and what do the actors change each night, and if I were the director, what might I do different? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was really green and had no experience at all, I made the mistake of once I made a suggestion on opening night to the director, and it was a pretty big, like, kind of earth-changing, why don't you change the entire ending to be like this? I think it would be better that way. I feel pretty embarrassed. Needless to say, he didn't take that, you know, that note from his follow spot technician.
Huh. do you think it was still a good note? Like, would you, if you were directing that play right now, would you do it that way?
Would I have? No, the real question is, would I have done it at the same time?
You know,
it was, like I said, this was our last preview or something.
Oh, okay.
Definitely no time to make that kind of, and if I was the director and I had given that note to my actors, they all would have groaned and, you know, harbored a secret hate against me for the rest of their acting career. But,
that's fair. I think people may harbor secret hates against me for their acting careers.
Yeah.
I feel like that's part of just getting your hands dirty, right? Mm.
You got to make some mistakes, sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Or ruffle some people's feathers if you're not, you know, you're not doing good work. There's that
idea. Yes, I love ruffling feathers.
That's, I know, yeah.
As Jeff knows.
my tail feathers are a little bruised and plucked, but they're growing back. It's
good.
Been a year, yeah.
Jay, I want to hear from you. What?
Sure.
Because as last time I listened to the podcast, I thought I should ask you more questions because you have sharp answers.
Okay. Well,
pressure's on.
You've been directed by both, of course, you know, by very experienced older directors and mm-hmm. and by your peers. What do you think the difference is as an actor? Like, how does that how does that change things? How does that change the game?
I mean, I'm still a fairly green actor, I think, in the grand scheme of things. Like, you know, I mean, I've done work, but not a ton, not compared to some people. And I don't know. I've always kind of, the theater is just always a really safe place, I assume. So I assume any director that comes and gives me a note is trying to make the show better, is trying to make me better. So it really doesn't matter what their age is to some degree, to me anyway. I don't know that that's everyone. And again, I'm a younger actor. And to be honest, actually, as I'm thinking about it, I can't think of any shows that I've been in that I've had a very experienced older director. I don't know that I've ever... I'm trying to think of anything that I've been in that's been, well, I guess, other than in high school. But then, yeah.
Well, from my experience, that serves to your credit. I mean, you take direction really well, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm.
So he might not be the best person to determine which of us is the better director, if that's the direction you're going here, Austin.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I'm like, well, as I asked that question, I'm like, Jay's always so friendly and so open to working. He's going to have a friendly answer to this question, and I'm really disappointed.
Yeah, that's boring. Yeah,
I really hoped you'd be like, well, yeah, every time you jerks direct me,
right? Just filled with spite.
Just, I just had a thought. This is kind of a fun thing I've enjoyed, but there's also been a lot of rough patches to it. But when you're in college, there is kind of this like idolization of the director. If he's, you know, if the head of the department's directing you in a show, you give him this big respect, and because, you know, you're there to learn from them, so hopefully you think these guys are great, they can teach me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go out of college, hopefully there's a point where you feel like you are at the point where you can be critical of some of the things they do and kind of start forming your own voice and your own opinions. And that's a fun place to be in a lot of ways when you're young and directing young actors who are just starting to say, no, I'm not going to accept everything as, oh, this must be a brilliant idea because the director said it.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be kind of like this great collaborative consensus that doesn't happen in a lot of college shows where, again, the best ideas in the room kind of get hashed out and that cream rises to the top.
That's another thing. This is two ticks. I'm going to make a tick on my hand now. My left hand has two ticks for similar similar direction style, but... Yeah, I think that we both agree that when we're creating theater, we're making something that's bigger than the sum of our parts. You know, yeah, as individuals, if you get locked in your head as an actor or a director, and what you're thinking is the only thing that's important, and I think this is much probably more common with directors, then you close yourself off to the reality that you know, the more people you have working on the project, the better it's going to be. The more people you get on one idea, you get their opinions on a single idea, the better that idea is going to become. And I really felt that with the few productions that I've worked on with you guys.
I think that's very true, but at least from an actor's standpoint, I always like, it's kind of the director's role though to be the one guy pointing out, like sifting through all those voices, right? To be kind of the one guy like steering the ship, you know, mm-hmm, what I mean? Like sometimes some directors that I've worked with, I find are too willing to listen to, you know, it can very quickly kind of descend into, you know, just kind of talking over the same thing again and again and again until somebody's got to kind of like set the course.
Yeah, the focus has to be on the performance, not on, you know, analyzing and debating what the best course of action. I mean, I might be difficult of some of, I might be guilty of some of that myself.
I think at some point you've got to say, if you've got three ideas, both alike in dignity, then that is the director's job to say, we're going to go with this one,
mm-hmm,
until I think it doesn't work. Or, you know, we're going to go with this idea, trust it, dive into it, do it, give it your all as an actor, you know, commit to this choice and trust that I'll be watching the show, will have its best interests at heart, and will tell you whether or not that sinks or swims.
I mean, in a lot of ways, that's, I think, the way that you have to direct when you're directing your peers is you're more of a facilitator, really, than you are a commander in chief. But even if you can't say yes or no or this idea, I mean, in my personal toolbox, the tool I use is when someone asks you a question, either say yes, no, or I don't know, but I'm going to tell you tomorrow. I think that's okay too. You know, sleep on it.
Those are all possible answers, Jeff.
What?
I mean, right? Are there other answers outside yes,
or
no?
It could
or
be maybe. Or let me think about it. I mean, that's not as good as I will have an answer for you tomorrow. You know, you want your actors to go home and sleep well at night with the idea that their production is going to be great.
That's true. I can attest, again, another problem in young theater companies is that people will want to go out and drink and celebrate their successes. Mm-hmm. And I can attest right now that actors, a good night's sleep makes you better. If you were up till 3 a.m. drinking and you've got a show coming up, you will just not be as good.
Yeah.
Don't believe the lies.
Well, I like your method in Midsummer Night's Dream. You abstained from all alcohol for the duration of the production and the rehearsal.
I did. I usually do that. Or anymore, I don't drink that much, so it's becoming less of a big like cutoff and more of a business as usual. But
well, I think another part of that is okay. Let me ask you a question, because I kind of feel this way that when you're directing your peers, there's sort of a division that has to naturally happen, you know, I suppose as a leader or facilitator or whatever you are, where it doesn't feel as comfortable to fraternize, I guess. And maybe that's just a cultural thing. But I felt personally when you abstained from coming out and drinking with us that that might have been a part of it, because I could definitely relate to that, that in order to have that command that kind of respect, or, you know, for us to respect your authority on some level, you know, you can't joke around with us as much and be silly and make faces and, you know what I mean?
I hope not. I feel like I'm pretty silly at rehearsals. Like, that's kind of my job at rehearsal, is to make the face first so that the actors are comfortable to make the face next.
So you don't feel that it's a problem then? You feel totally comfortable fraternizing just as much with your actors while you're in a production as you are when you're outside of a production?
Yes, I may get more focused. I may have more stuff to do and not maybe hang out with them as much afterwards, or need to, you know, to go home and do some stuff or make some plans for the day. Or usually, you know, I usually in these shows I do, I'm kind of doing multiple things, so I might have to go home a bit early because I'm gonna have to wake up in the morning and maybe work on the set and do some stuff. And there's usually a couple of us like that who kind of take point on some of these projects. But I think it needs to be, like, in a good world, it needs to be the opposite. And I hope that I don't put on airs, because in my estimation, the director has to give of himself first. Mm. If you want your actors to trust that it's a safe spot and that they can open up emotionally, be vulnerable, express themselves, I think you need to do that first. I like to always start rehearsal by telling the cast where the show emotionally hits me, and just trying to kind of have a personal moment where I just try to, you know, maybe reveal a part of myself and show them where I'm coming from and how the show makes me feel and how it hits me. And hopefully, if you're open with them, then they'll feel safe to be open with you and eventually be open with all the different audiences that will come and see the show.
That's powerful, man. That really is.
But
gem of wisdom. I'm going to write this down after we're done.
Right
with
next
this.
To the two tick marks.
The two tick marks on my hand. Yep.
But
for all at a third, actually, right now. Yeah, there we go.
But that, I mean, there's a less expansive version of that, right? If you've ever tried to, you've done this. You're coaching an actor, and they're just not quite giving you. They're scared. You can just see that they're just a little apprehensive about trying something big or trying the big yell. The big run across the stage where they shout or whatever they need to do. And sometimes you've got to do it first. You've got to, you know, be the one to see, no, you know, bigger like this and run across the stage shouting or shake yourself like a maniac or just be able to, you know, you're not an actor maybe, but you can still throw yourself at something just to kind of give them the permission.
Right.
That it's okay. It's okay to look weird. I'll look weird. I'll make a fool of myself so that you can do the same thing. You can be free and no one will judge you.
Well, I think that's something that you're really good at, especially because, I mean, just in my experience, at least in the few scenes that we've worked on together, that you don't tend to do that for me, for my actions. You know, for instance, you don't say it should be like this and then you walk on stage and deliver my lines for me and give me a line reading, which is nice. You usually do. I'm just thinking about this and realizing this is what you have been doing. But, you know, you walk into the rehearsal room and for you to already be big and animated and available emotionally, is probably the best way to get me to do the same thing in the scene. Because then you're not feeding me a line that I'm trying to parrot back to you in a certain way. But yeah, powerful stuff, man. Powerful stuff. Yeah. Hey, what are you doing like the next couple of months? Because let's work together.
Yeah. No, you know, and this is cool because I think that two quick things I want to say about that. Although, yeah, I would love to work with you sometime again. It's fun. But the first thing is what I found when I started getting into directing is that I could never do that stuff as an actor. I couldn't be emotionally available as an actor. I couldn't throw myself into a choice as an actor. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, directing, I can kind of do that. Like, I don't know, like if I'm talking to the cast about something that hits me about the show, I really feel it. Like it kind of hits me. But as an actor, I could never, those doors would always just stay so closed up.
Mm.
So that's kind of where I think some people find their way into different professions. It's two different things. It's a weird thing. But you have, and every director has a different approach, because thinking about how you kind of approach stuff, you've got a much more quiet, reserved focus, and you really do a good job of stepping back. Like, you kind of set the scene. And I don't know, you do have that way about you that some directors do where you don't have to yell and growl like I feel like I do. Where you can, which, I mean, sometimes if anyone's ever done it with me, done a show with me, I don't, my notes will devolve into inhuman animal sounds.
Yes.
But you can be more articulate and can kind of just set back and you can give that little note that kind of clarifies stuff. So I guess I'm curious, because I can't do that. How do you do that? How do you come about and know, oh, if I just give them a little bit more space, they'll find their way through this quagmire?
Well, I wasn't even aware that I did that, so that's a tough question, but maybe I can try to crack that. But first, let me mark down, so that's like one on the different side, three on the, just want to update people about the tally here. I don't know, man. I think you just got to have a lot of trust of your actors. And you do have that. I'm not saying, you know, that's definitely not a difference between us. But I think, yeah, if you trust your actors, you also can't, I think, and it's important that you can't push them to a place that they're not ready to go. And sometimes that causes them to parrot. It causes them to pretend as if they're feeling this thing. You don't want them to play some emotion. You want them to really feel it or to really act out. You just said how articulate I was, and I'm being so inarticulate here. But
I know, whenever someone's like, he's such a good speaker, just why don't you say something profound? You're like, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so that's cool. So this is when you, no. All right, here's what I want to talk about this too, because this is, that's when you're working well with actors. What happens when there's the conflict?
Right.
What happens when the actor, you've got an idea, you think, oh, this would be a good idea, but the actor's like, you're injured in the head.
totally doesn't trust your direction, and yeah.
Yeah, just is completely against the idea.
Well, sometimes there's nothing you can do about that, you know? I don't know. I kind of feel like you definitely have to push that actor as far as they're able to go. I think for the sake of the production and for everyone else who's involved, you've got to do your best to help them get to that place, even if it means, you know, being a little bit of a meanie. I'm going to, you know, censor myself here so we don't have to put the explicit on iTunes. But so I think that a little bit of that is necessary. But sometimes, I don't know, sometimes there is nothing you can do. Try to relate. Try to, you know, this person's a human being. They've got their own stuff, which hopefully they don't bring to rehearsal. But sometimes that baggage is pretty heavy, you know. I don't know.
I remember one time there was, it was kind of a rough rehearsal process. We weren't all seeing eye to eye about things. But there was a choice I really wanted the actor to try. And it was very close to opening. And he was just in a very cranky mood. He was in the kind of mood where he would not take direction from me. Like, if I had an idea, he would just be against. People get this way. It wasn't really his fault. It wasn't my fault. I mean, I have opinions about whose fault it was, but I'll just say, like, sometimes, you know, people just get cranky, and you work very hard, you get very, very invested in the show, and this happens. But I really wanted him to try something, and I knew he wouldn't like it. So as I'm giving him notes and he's taking my notes begrudgingly, like he's got his sunglasses on, he's like smoking a cigarette, like half writing down scribbles. I said, oh yeah, the other day, this was like a couple weeks ago, when you were in that scene, you did this and it was so good. It was so strong and so powerful. And you haven't done it ever again. Could you go back to that choice? I thought it was a brilliant choice. And he's like, oh, I forgot about that, but I like that. I'll give that a try. And it was my idea. I just lied to him.
And just made it seem like it was... That's really wise. Yeah, I don't know if I'm that creative, honestly. But, I mean, you remember, we had a very similar issue, you know, and there was... We butted heads, me and another actor, about a musical choice.
Yes.
And it was a week before opening, and he wanted to change things up. But the unfortunate part was that he was the musical director, but the person who was accompanying him... you know, had the it was in an unfortunate position of having to relearn her song every night. And as we get closer,
yeah, that was rough.
That was really rough. As we get closer and closer to opening, it was time to you know, tell him that he needed to make a decision.
Yeah.
Or that I had made a decision already.
I should set the scene for this story a little bit, because the actor was writing his own music for the character, and that was very cool, very good music, very good musician.
It was beautiful, yeah.
But he was a very free-form artist, and he wanted to change up the song every night. The problem was there was another actress who was supposed to sing a duet with him. He would change the duet every night, and we would all suffer watching this poor actress try to figure out what the new song was, how the new song went, and how she was going to sing a duet with this song, this changing song. And she was very, very gracious, but it was very painful to watch her like be like, well, if you sing a different song every night, I won't know it.
didn't put the blame on him. Yeah, she is very, very gracious. But
so what, you know, and I was an actor in that show, so I never saw the conversation between you and him. But what did that boil down to? What did you have to do to be like, hey?
Well, you know, we were talking, and I had one of those moments where you realize that, oh, this person isn't even talking to me. You know, this person's talking to their dad or to their platoon officer. You know, like they're not even seeing me talk to them. And he was obviously, I had a problem with something else that I don't even think he could put his finger on. It wasn't about that choice is what it boiled down to. It was sort of a amalgam, I think, of having to take direction and authority issues, which... I guess people have issues. But in retrospect, I definitely don't put the blame on the actor as well, which is weird, you know, because you'd think that that would be so natural that all of us in this room might agree. I don't know that that could be the direction that you could put blame on, but I certainly feel responsible. And in my, you know, having had that experience, I think I might approach that differently from the very beginning by dealing with giving him direction in a different way that wasn't so authoritative, maybe. But what it boiled down to
wasn't so authoritative. You would give him more free rein.
Well, how could I put this? That maybe we had a dialogue about why authority was necessary in this case, and get him on my side about authority, I suppose. But what it boiled down to was, unfortunately, I just had to eventually put my foot down and say, "This is not up for negotiation. This is the way it has to be," which I hated. You know, I hate to be that bad guy and say this is the way it has to go. And it was a very uncomfortable, not very fun conversation to have.
You bring up a good point, though. Knowing, I think this happens a lot because acting is so keyed into your emotions, and people, it blurs that line between art and life and reality. And it can, you do sometimes have to step back and say, okay, this isn't an argument about why that line of text should or should not be in the play. This is an argument that you should be having because you broke up with your girlfriend. You know, you just had an argument on the phone with your parents, or you lost your job and you're not sure how you're going to get to pay rent or whatever, you know, or you had an existential crisis because you read the wrong poem and now you don't know where you fit in the universe.
And I have some ideas about why he was having this. I have some ideas about who he was imagining he was talking to, but I'm not going to get into trying to psychoanalyze people. But
and that's that weird authority thing, right? Like, as soon as you become an authority figure, I'm not a huge fan of authority figures because I tend to have authoritarian defiance disorder as it is, but that's a weird thing to be in, right? Like, when you become that focus for someone being mad at their teacher, their parents, or whatever, It's a weird moment in life.
It is. But without saying who that person was that I think he was talking to, I think that what I would have changed is that he experienced fatigue because I gave him too much critical feedback. And in my mind, you know, criticism is good. It's constructive. But I think that it was so much critical feedback that he felt he didn't feel confident that he was doing a good enough job. And he was more willing to believe the way that he dealt with that is instead of, you know, reassuring himself that he's a good actor or coming to me and asking me, you know, am I doing okay here? I'm a little worried about this criticism. I think he sort of put himself, he told himself, no, I'm good. The problem is Jeff. The problem is my director. So in retrospect, I think I might have fatigued him, you know, with 100 too many notes, you know. He had a huge role and he had all of this responsibility and wrote all this music, and it must have been really stressful, particularly for him. Yeah.
All right, we'll have to let's move on from this topic.
Sure.
We could spend hours if we want to talk about actors who annoyed us. And maybe Jay, one day we'll let you do how directors annoy me, the Jay Minton monologues. But I want to wrap this up. This has been really fun, but let's do final thoughts here. Why direct? Why directing? What if you, I mean, I always put people on the spot like this on this podcast. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But you know what hits you about directing? Why do you want to do it?
I'm just a big fan of story, you know? I mean, when I was, I think the first play I directed, I was 4 years old, and we put a blanket up over this jungle gym, and that was our curtain. And we came through and we did a play. I don't even remember. You know, I think we reenacted The Neverending Story, and that was our first play. But I think that's why. I think I love what story does and how it makes us feel and how it teaches us in particular. And I've always felt more connected to being a part of telling that story in a more general way than as an actor, where you're stepping into a role and acting it out. I've always felt like there's a value in being the storyteller. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, that's very... You can put another tally mark on your hand because I agree with you.
Okay. That's final tally mark is 4-1.
That's good. That may be our best ever.
That we've been most agreeable. Well, it's
exactly.
Because we didn't talk about production values. That's why.
Yes. I think we're on our very best behavior too, because people will listen to us.
Yeah.
And it's not just us at a bar shouting at each other.
Yeah.
This has been a ton of fun. Thank you very much, Jeff Painter, for coming out and doing this.
Yeah, thank you. It was great.
Thanks, Jay Minton, for being around here again. If you want to send us any feedback or ask us any questions, you can always find us at facebook.com/animalfiretheater, animalfiretheater.wordpress.com, unless I did that backwards. I think that's right. And aftheater@gmail.com. And we'll see you guys next week. Thank you very much.